Hi, this is Mike McNamara, and you're listening to All Marine Radio on your home for it, the one and only All Warrior Radio Network.
If it's Thursday, it's time for the Lynch and Kenny event. Joining me from McAllen, Texas, Tim Lynch. Tim, how you doing?
Doing just great this week, Mac. How are you?
I'm all right. How's the public pull-up bar?
Public pull-up bar is frequently used by me and I think three other people, which is appalling given the number of people in the area.
But appropriate given it's the most obese city in the nation.
Yeah, and it's a mystery to me why the city fathers aren't stressing getting outside exercising and stop eating Cheetos, but they're doing the exact opposite.
I wouldn't say appropriate. It's expected, given that it's supposed to, it wouldn't get that much use. And from Southern California, Jeff Kenny joins us. Jeff, how you doing?
Good. You know, I'm out every day. We're actually training people outside, so it's a good week.
Nice. Well, congratulations to you. That's impressive.
It is. It's a whole new world. It brings back memories of being outside, which should be, you know, du jour for us, but, you know, whatever.
All right, I want to talk about a few things today. Jeff started watching, I don't know, a week or so ago, started watching Ken Burns' Vietnam War series. And then I thought, you know, it came out when I was in the fall of 2017, it came out. So it's been a while. And normally when you know, time goes by and you watch something again, you know, kind of your lens normally has changed a little bit. And so I want to talk about that. I also want to talk about, we've had a pretty interesting discussion about dissent and our thoughts on, you know, what it is to be somebody who fights for your country and then dissents. And then I want to talk about the whole Marine Corps PFT. So that's kind of the agenda today. So Jeff started the whole Vietnam War series thing. So Jeff, before we talk about dissent, give me something that has struck you in watching the whole series.
Well, first of all,
are you done with it or?
I'm on episode 9. It's out of 10.
Okay, 9 out of 10. And it's, again, for everybody, it's 18 hours and 10 episodes. And so, Jeff, on number 9.
I have to tell you, I've gone back. I went back to episode 3 because some of the stuff, I technically wanted to see how they handled certain incidents, like the attack on Play Me, which led to the Battle of LZ X-Ray in 1965, right, and some other things that just relate to what I'm doing, training advisors. So that's why I haven't finished, but I'm on episode 9 now, and I have to say it's masterful. The way it was done, it's I don't say it's a good thing that it's masterful. It's a fine piece of film craftsmanship. Let me put it that way. And I've watched another one which I thought highly of, called Vietnam in HD, which I'm kind of like comparing the two. They're both real good. This one definitely has an agenda, the Vietnam War by Ken Burns. The other one, I think the agenda was just to get a lot of people watching it. But they both cover the same ground and they both have similar, messages to convey. So I'll say that.
All right. Give me, what's been, either a piece of video, hold on. We'll save that. We'll go around a second time. I followed Jeff. So, in watching it the second time, again, I'm struck by the second time by the thing that stuck with me the most in the first time. And that is I'd never seen the Viet Cong perspective. I'd never seen the NVA perspective that you get, here, in anything I've ever watched. And I like Tim and Jeff. I mean, you know, we've watched this stuff a long time, and I'd never seen, you know, those guys those guys, you know, live on film, you know, talking about the way they fought, what they did, and whatnot. And so I still find that, you know, riveting stuff. And so, I mean, to me, that. But I will tell you. Well, I won't go there. To me,
that's a good point. If I could just go out, you know, reiterate that. That is the amazing part, because I'm getting ready when I see these Viet Cong guys come on, or the North Vietnamese spy, or the you know, the NBA officers and stuff like that, and they start talking. I'm all set to get the opposite enemy propaganda thing. And although there's some of that, some of these guys are very upfront. And one of them actually says, you know, we were all in the same boat, us and the Americans. And we would see them when a person got wounded, they would all go to the wounded man. You know, they would try and they try desperately to get the wounded man out, and then they would weep sometimes,
right.
You know, and it's the same way we felt about it.
Right.
And so it was very, I wasn't expecting it. I just wasn't expecting it. And I was impressed by it. And it made me believe a lot of the other things in the, or start to believe a lot of the other things before my naturally questioning, you know, personality started. Now, wait a minute about that. You know, but I have to tell you, they string together enough highly, you know, authentic things for you to see and hear that it makes some of the questionable things hard to deny.
Right. Well, and so, yeah, not to me, that was, and then there's one, he's an NVA soldier, and it's, they're talking about, I'm in episode 8, so I've been trying to catch Jeff, but I can't catch him. So they're talking about the Battle of Hue, and the NVA and the Viet Cong that were with them, at the end of the battle, as they're leaving, or and throughout the battle, they killed 2,800 civilians in Hue, and they buried them in a mass grave west of the city. And you have one NVA soldier that talks about it. He says, we don't really talk about this that much. He said, please be careful how you use this. But I will tell you the truth. And you sit there and watch that going, holy shit. Right? Mm-hmm. Holy shit. So to me, that's, you know, and again, I like everybody, like both Jeff and Tim, I mean, there's good and bad in the Burns documentary. And, but to me, I mean, that is the best part. I mean, something that I had no idea, no insight into. You know, you see these guys from the Viet Cong, and the guys who fought it at LZ X-Ray, right? Explaining to you what they did, how they did it, why they knew, and all the rest of that stuff, right? You hear, you know, one of the guys who fought up near the DMZ saying, you know, the Americans were easy to find. All you had to do was, you know, follow the cigarette butts. And we did.
Yep.
And we found them all the time. And so I found that to be, you know, still riveting stuff. Timmy?
Yeah, I agree with the North Vietnamese perspective, because I remember you and I were discussing this when it was running, and we were both remarking about how cool that was, because I'd never seen that either. But what you didn't see very much of, if at all, were some pretty outstanding South Vietnamese soldiers and officers and commanders. That they seemed to me that Burns and those guys short-shifted the South Vietnamese significantly.
Okay,
and
okay. Before we editorialize, something that you saw in it, right?
So, okay. Well, good. Well, then I'll go right back. So that was the one thing that bothered me. I started watching from the beginning behind both you and Jeff. And when that guy Musgrave came on, when they first started talking, this is an Army lieutenant who was very emotive. And I do that too. So I'm not questioning the emotive, but his perspective was as if he was the hunted. They were getting their asses kicked. It was all a big waste of time, and he was losing men. And that's not, and I think a vast majority of the people I know who were in Vietnam, which obviously would be contemporaries of my father, they were professionals about this. Now, we can all agree the reason we're in Vietnam was bullshit, but we can say the same thing about Iraq and Afghanistan. But I don't think you're going to find too many stories from lieutenants in Afghanistan that are, woe is me, this whole thing is crappy, I was scared the entire time I was there. I wasn't scared the entire time I was there. There were times I was scared, but they weren't frequent. Because we were the apex predators. We were the apex predators there, and we're the apex predators in Afghanistan and Iraq. And there's a different damn mental process between a guy that's dealing with PTSD from being a victim, like some poor French Polish that was in Verdun getting shelled, and that's all he ever did, and a guy who was out hunting and kicking ass.
So let me ask you. Okay, so let me ask you a question about that. So that perspective, and you talk about Musgrave when he's talking about how scared he was, right?
Yeah, right. I think we're talking about two different guys.
Right? Yeah, and then you start talking about an Army lieutenant, but that's not Musgrave. Yeah. Musgrave's Marine. Yeah.
Oh, I thought he was Army.
No.
He was a 1-9 guy.
So how do you so Charlie Beckwith, when he's asked about the NVA, he says
they're great soldiers.
He says they're the. He says something like, "They're the best soldiers I've ever seen. I wish I had 200 of them."
Yeah. My dad said the same thing.
And he puts his head down. He puts his head down, and he says it a second time. They're the best. They're the best. So it's interesting.
Yeah, but Charlie Beckwith didn't spend 12 months being afraid, terrified every day that he was going to lose his precious little life. Right. That's not the fucking job. Because we're not supposed to be concerned about that kind of stuff. More concerned about losing unnecessarily lives of our Marines, but being personally afraid. I heard that and I wanted to puke, and that unfortunately because
but Timmy, let me say this. But you know, and Jeff, talk about the point where you begin to like Musgrave. What he said.
Well, Musgrave. He's you know, talking about being at home and why I joined the Marine Corps. And then pretty soon he's over there. And it's the episode you're on now, I think, Mac. And no, it was the episode before.
Yeah, it's a couple before where I'm at now.
He's been in combat extensively. And he says a little bit of what Timmy was saying about being afraid and hating the NVA because of their competence and being afraid of their competence and hating them and wanting to kill them. And then he says, and it's kind of at first you're like a little confused. He goes, "I only killed one human being when I was in Vietnam when I first got there. I never killed another human after him." He goes, "But I smoked," and I excuse me, people who are listening, I'm just quoting this guy. Right. He said, "But I smoked a lot of gooks, and I hosed down a lot of slopes, and I burned up a lot of dinks." In other words, you're saying he objectified the enemy. So we wouldn't have to deal with their humanity. And it was easier to do because they're so terrifyingly competent. And they were killing Marines left, especially in 1-9, especially in the summer of 67.
Right.
You know?
Right.
So that, you know, that was, you what know I what? Was impressed about the guy. Because he had that – I have a bone – I mean, you guys know this, right? I got a bone-deep fucking hatred for the guys we've been fighting for the last 19 years. And, you know – whenever a Marine or soldier is in trouble for murder over there, I'm almost always going to side with the guy charged with murder until I find out it's really egregious, like some of them have been, killing women and kids and stuff. But otherwise, I'm willing to give the guy the benefit of the doubt because I remember the pictures. And me and my wife just watched last week another documentary about the actual day that the Trade Center towers came down from people who survived. And they show these people talking on the phone to their families and then jumping to avoid being burned. So there's that. And I can understand that level of hate. It gets disappointing with the guy later on. I don't know if we'll talk about that. But the bottom line is he makes every Marine who ever was in action, he establishes a bond in that in that vignette. So that's masterful. And then there's another guy named Harris who's in, I think, 2-9 or 2-3 or something. But I think it's 2-9. But he's up in that same area going through a lot of the same stuff. He's a black Marine from Roxbury, Boston. He's very good, too. And then finally, there's another guy who's kind of like a pogue at first, meeting a guy who works in an office. And then eventually he finally gets into actual infantry action during the Battle of Way.
He's in 1-1, or he's with 1st Marine Regiment, and then they go up there. And then he's on an ITT team, interrogators. You know, translator team, you know, then, and there he's working with the two shop. And so, no, my point in bringing that up is that Musgrave, even though, you know, he talks about how scared he was. I mean, he's a 1-9 guy, man. He went up there, you know, and, you know, in as Jeff was saying, 1967, man, they fucking got it on with, again, the last time we fought a peer, again, is what, you know, 66 through 70 in really – I mean, and I would look at I-Corps is what I've learned the most about. I know it happened in other parts of Vietnam where you fought main force NVA units. But, you know, if you want to look at it on a consistent basis, you know, the northern part of I-Corps, I mean, it was fucking on. And so to me, it's you get both out of Musgrave. And he obviously puts his fear aside, you know. But what Timmy's expressing is – what I've heard from other Vietnam veterans in that
and check this out.
We don't want to be portrayed as these fucking bullshit victims, blah, blah, fucking blah. Right. We're no different from any other group of guys who went and fought. And that irritates them.
And those guys had plenty of time to dig up Frank Labuti, who was there at Marketplace when 1-8 got hit. He came out to relieve him. And Frank Labuti would have told him a story about the competence of the MVA and how fighting them. It would not have in any way, shape, or form been remotely close to Musgrave's. Everybody's legitimate, obviously, but not close. And there was no Labuti's in that damn thing. I mean, I think they got Beckwith in there, and he's a pretty impressive.
I know you're saying that. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah, but that's
I was waiting to see. Waiting to see you know, James Livingston or Ray Smith or something like that. Yeah, you're right.
Exactly. And when Ray Smith was running the 3rd Marine Division, again, this is from my readings and from talking to my dad, they weren't bumping into NVA and getting chewed up. They were chewing the NVA's ass up. There was a while.
Hold on. Ray Smith running the 3rd Marine Division? What are you talking about?
Yeah.
Until the 90s.
No, wait. Razor Ray Davis. God damn it. I'm sorry. Yes, Excuse me.
Right.
I'm talking to Jeff Davis. My bad.
Okay. All right.
Well, you know, it's like Colonel Ripley, when he came to IOC that time, he was pushing. He talked to lieutenants at breakfast, and then he had this book, No Shining Armor, about 3-3 in Vietnam.
His book.
He was telling a story about his company when he was up there. They found the enemy first. He didn't play that fucking cigarettes in the fucking, you know, he trained his guys good. And he was annoyed that a lot of guys didn't. And he talked a little bit about policing up the company from 3-9 where Bobo got the Medal of Honor. He was part of
India 3-9.
Yeah, right.
Well, when my uncle Chad went back after getting off the recruiting duty after his 100 Keiko calls, he had Gulf 2-1, I believe it was. They did a bayonet charge. They were so dominant that they pinned apparently I'm not sure what kind of unit very close to him, and his Marines were screaming, give him the steel. And the Uncle Chad says, all right, fix bayonets. And as soon as they did that, the NVA ran. I mean, they just got slaughtered because they ran, because that's what happens. Right. But they were so dominant and so confident that they were fixing bayonets and going after these guys if they caught him in an exposed position behind a paddy dike. That's not anything. You didn't see anything like that in that Ken Burns thing. You would have never thought that had happened, that there were people with that proficiency over there.
Yeah.
What about
there was bravery at the low level, but not at the higher. The only guy he gives kudos to is General Wayand, who was Army general who, you know, Westmoreland originally told him, push your guys out in the early 68 to the border areas.
To the Laos
border. He convinced them to let me come back around Saigon. That's probably the reason why we managed to hang on to Saigon, you know, as effectively as we did.
He's pretty good. He's good to, you know, John Paul Van Zandt, right? Right.
Van Zandt.
And Stevie Van Zandt.
Van Zandt is
the guitarist.
Leonard Skinner, man.
And then he's good to Beckwith. Let me ask you this. Is there something that sticks in your head, in terms of video, the power, the raw power of something somebody said? Jeff, is there something that sticks in your head? I know there's a ton of it, but there's a lot of power. There's a lot of powerful stuff in it.
Yeah, I have to tell you, the remember the doctor who was in a helicopter with his helicopter is bad weather. They flew into the side of a mountain and everyone's dead except for him and one other guy. And then that guy dies and he walks away from the helicopter down the mountain, knowing he probably should stay up there, but he just doesn't think it's, and he looks up and there's two helicopters landing up there. And then in the next 5 minutes, he's captured. And then he goes to this horrific fucking 3 years. He's still a POW, and I'm watching now. I'm on episode 9. But he's a POW. He's not a POW at first for the first 3 years in Hanoi. He's up there in the Central Highlands being moved from one place to another. And his wounds aren't treated. You know, he's in dire straits. And they're starving. They get just barely enough to not die right away, but they're dying and keep him weak and easy to handle. And they fucking the CO of the little POW group there, and he buries 13 of the 25 or 30 of them that were there. But the CO of the place has a cat. Only these fucking North Vietnamese have cats instead of dogs. Tells you something about them. But anyway, these guys, they decide. The cat is very bold and comes walking around them and shit, you know, meowing and stuff. They decide, let's eat this fucking cat. So they catch the cat. They behead him. They pull his little tabby paws off and they're getting ready to feast on him. And the guard comes down and says, what do you got there? It's a weasel. We caught him. Okay, if we eat him? Yeah. And then he looks down. He sees, have you seen the fucking CO's cat? And he looks down. Here's the cat's, one of the cat's paws. You know, they neglected to get rid of it. So now they're punished. And he, they say, who did this, right? And him and one other guy said, they do basically like, I'm Spartacus. The other guy starts to confess, and then he confesses. He's like, all right, this whole thing's going to end now. They're going to kill me. That really jumped out at me, you know, to be at that level of hopelessness, but to still have the spirit to resist, you know? The spirit to sacrifice for another guy.
You know, Stockdale's quote, you know, the true test of character is not, you know, persevering, you know, when there's light at the end of the tunnel. The true test of character is when there's no light at the end of the tunnel and there's no hope of life ever coming to the end of the tunnel. Right. And, and I mean, to me, I can hear that in my head. The thing, I saw this the first time when it came out in September of 2017. And obviously the post-traumatic winning thing has happened since then. So I sit down to watch the first episode. And in the first 10 minutes, right, Max Cleland comes on and says, in Viktor Frankl's Man's Search for Meaning. And I'm like, bah!
I that happened to me too.
And I went, holy shit. I didn't remember. I mean, it wouldn't have meant anything to me because I hadn't had the experience. But in the first 10 minutes, you know, and you talk about being a Vietnam veteran and that, you know, what Frankl talks about is giving meaning to your suffering. And he said, that's as Vietnam veterans, that's what we've tried to do since we've come home. And I just remember I was sitting all by myself and I was just like, holy shit, man. Holy shit. And then I got pissed. And let me tell you, and here's why I got pissed. Why did somebody tell us, why did some behavioral health person in the DOD, right, in the Marine Corps, why didn't they tell us about Viktor Frankl? The people that are biased for service.
They don't know.
It's like, fuck, man. Are you kidding me? You know what?
That's
it's like,
serious.
Do they not see the world the way we see it? And so here you have another guy, Max Cleland, right? And who is just a giant in terms of helping veterans. The whole Vet Center thing, he was a huge part in creating those all around the nation. He's a huge part of making sure that if you go into a Vet Center, your record stays there. It cannot move unless you direct it to be moved. And that the veterans would be in those Vet Centers, which is not really the way they're set up now. And so, I mean, that was them. That was Vietnam guys trying to make a difference. And then you hear him say that. And then the more I thought about it, the more, you know, like, why didn't, you know, so anyway.
Well, I have to tell you, I think the same thing. And just like with the documentary itself, I think about the guy and the guys, the people who made this documentary, what in their background kind of comes through? Well, Ken Burns is kind of a draft dodger, right? I mean, I kind of have a broad, you know, anybody who didn't volunteer to go to me is a draft dodger. So like President Trump is a draft dodger to me, and George Bush, you know, but also think about Max Cleland and the whole Viktor Frankl thing. Here's a guy, Max Cleland, who's grievously wounded and missing limbs, but it's not because of what the enemy did. It's because of, you know, a bumbled grenade, one of ours, right? So it's like to be in that situation and have that happen, you know, I can see why he'd say, this is a meaningless fucking event I'm going through here, you know?
Right.
But it's not. And so I think to his credit, it's not, you know, all that stuff at the vet centers. And as for that matter, the Vietnam Memorial in DC,
right,
he had a lot to do with that, right, you know, is the way you get that. Because the truth of it is, any kind of wound, I think, any kind of, you know, the war never goes the way you think it's going to go. And you never have a satisfying ending to what you're doing. You're always like, I'm going to go back one more time and see if I can get it right this time.
Right.
And it's a trap because you go back and other fucked up shit happens. And that doesn't really work out good. It may not be a catastrophe, but it's just a series of, you know, of horrible, bloody events that happen again and again. And you just gotta, I think a lot of guys like Tim's dad and a lot of guys who do, you know, who did this thing in Vietnam, they're like, hey, it wasn't perfect, but you know, we accomplished our mission.
We did our best, right? We were handed this thing and we went and we did our best, which is, I think, the same thing that we would say.
Yeah.
And even while we would be critical. To me, some piece of audio or video or image that has stuck in your head.
Yeah, I've got one, and this is an interesting contrast between me and Jeff. And this is why I love Jeff so much. He talks about Iwo Jima and his Ira Hayes' hands, and it made me cry thinking about it, you know? And now he talks about this Vietnam thing, which has got all this great combat footage, and he talks about the courage of these POWs who were starving. And me, what I remember from the first time and this time, on the third episode, they got a beautiful shot of an NVA patrol getting hit with a Claymore. I've played that like five times because I always wanted to see what happened when you get hit with a Claymore. And these frigging guys fold. It's amazing. And I go back and I watch it. Zip, 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 boom. It gets like seven of them right off the bat. That's what I thought was amazing. And that shows you something about me versus Jeff. I'm not sure what it says, but it's what I remember.
Well, no, I mean, what's embedded in your head?
It says you're more observant than I am.
Give me one more, Jeff. I mean, there's a lot. I mean, you talk about Jeff's almost at the 18-hour mark. I'm probably at about 14 or 15.
There's this Boston guy named Valily, who's a Marine, and he's talking about fucking Cali, and he hates him. He hates Cali. He says this guy Cali is a killer, and he's a sick individual. And let me tell you, he goes, I'm not making a film here, you know, glorifying the United States Marine Corps, but we didn't have that fucking guy. We didn't have that fucking guy. We had guys who committed war crimes, and I hate them, and I wish I could have killed them. So, and I didn't kill them, and the reason was I was afraid to. And, I mean, that was stunning part, too, because he said, you know, he's proud of being a Marine still, and he don't want to be tarred with the William F. Cowley brush. But he admits we had bad guys, but not to the point where they're going to be killing like, you know, 200-300, you know, being the main engine for killing all this, nothing but women and kids and old men.
Well, Musgrave talks about it, about if you got captured and you were an NVA soldier.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. You didn't make it back.
You didn't make it back, you know?
Yeah.
And, you know, so interesting to me. I mean, Marlanis's jaw quivering. I don't know why that's like blasted into my brain housing group, but you know,
because Merlanis is a strong dude. That's why.
Yeah. I mean, he is. I mean, he's, you know, he grows up. Wait, I was going to wait. Jeff was talking about Cali. Let me just make a point before I finish my Merlanis point about Cali. When I don't know. Oh, I know how. Ken Rogers, who made the documentary Bravo, Common Men, Uncommon Valor, which if you've never seen, watch it. It's on Amazon Prime. If you remember, you can watch it for free.
What would he think of Musgrave?
Well, good question. And so he introduces me to his company commander there. And his name is Ken Pipes, and he passed away about a year ago. And so Ken Pipes and I, you know, I call him up, introduce myself. I wanted him to come on and talk. But Rogers fucks me up because he tells Pipes that I ask hard questions. And what he meant was I asked like substantive questions. Well, Pipes has had to live with the whole Ghost Patrol from Bravo 1-6, where they send out a reinforced platoon of 50-plus guys, and and what, 30 of them die, okay?
Yeah, at Hawkins.
Yeah, and so, but he liked me, and so he would call me. And so it was, you know, so when I hear, you know, Jeff, you know, talking about that, about Cali, he's one that asked me one night, Mac, do you know much about Mili? And I said, well, you know, yeah, a little bit. But then I got off the phone, and I'm like, I don't know that much about Mili, now that I think about it. And I started watching everything that I could about Mili. And I was blown away because it was nothing that I had anticipated because of my general knowledge. And what my anticipation was that these guys had been, you know, hammered. They'd been in Vietnam for a long time, and they finally had enough, and they snapped. Well,
yeah, it wasn't
totally not like that, right? So I started asking Marlantis, and I can't remember. I asked Ken Rogers, I asked a whole bunch of guys, hey, would you come on to talk about Mili? And I was expecting them all to say no. And
say yes.
Every one of them said yes without hesitation, because they're still pissed about that, how everybody got painted, right, as rapist and baby killer and all the rest of that shit.
Yep.
And so I just that is aside. Now my Marlantis point is you know, he gets asked about, you know, about the war, and he said, you know, what I can forgive is, you know, an errant assumptions, an errant strategy. What I can't forgive, and again to reemphasize Timmy's point, Marlantis, I mean, he's a Rhodes Scholar. He's a strong guy. He's a Navy Cross recipient as an infantry officer in Vietnam. Fighting in, you know, in the mountains of of the northern part of I Corps, you know, blah blah blah, and you know, he says, what I can't forgive is when they knew, when they believed it wasn't winnable,
right?
That they continued on this, and they sacrificed tens of thousands of young people, and they're only and then he stops talking.
That's the horrible part.
Then he stops talking. And he hasn't got emotional, right? He hasn't shed a tear. You know, his voice hasn't cracked. And when he stops speaking, his jaw just starts quivering.
Right.
And it's like wow. So Timmy, how about you? Another piece of video that you remember? You have to unmute yourself.
Oh. Jesus, I keep on doing that to myself. So, thanks, man. Yeah, no, I was going back and looking at some of the protester stuff, and because I wasn't so sure how much had been in there, but I tell you, there's a couple of those guys that were leading those protests that were at least working out a conviction, and I have a little bit of a more charitable view of some of them, but not all of them. That was the only other big surprise. I mean, there were some people there who had a legitimate view and were absolutely expressing their heartfelt convictions, not just trying to dodge the death. Because ultimate irony of the whole thing was, as soon as we entered the draft, the war protest stopped.
Exactly. I was just going to say that. Let's talk about the great demonstration that turned into a riot in 1973. Which one was there wasn't one, right? And the reason was because the draft ended in January of 73.
Well, exactly. let me tell you.
I've always felt them to be contemptible people, but there were a couple guys in that series that presented themselves well. And look, it's America. You can argue against that. There were people protesting World War II and the Civil War, for that matter. I found that part of it refreshing, although I think his overall coverage of the anti-war protesters was biased towards them. Because as Jeff just pointed out, it was mostly about him.
He talks about there's a small minority of people in the Weather Underground, and but he does admit there's like almost 2,000 bombings between like late 1969 and 1971. And most of the death that they caused was themselves because they're incompetent. They're college kids. But Bernadette Dorn and Ayers, the University of Chicago professors, right, and a bunch of other ones who were in the SDS and the weathermen who like did armored car robberies and killed police.
Right.
Almost all of them are out of prison and now have jobs working in academia, you know, as professors.
Right.
So, and I know that they downplayed that. Like Peter Coyote, who spent most, he's actually like unbiased narrator because he was on peyote and LSD the whole time Vietnam was going on, I think. So he wasn't really there. And then the other thing that's kind of annoying about it is the insipid flower child music that's played in every episode, you know, that you just get sick of it after a while.
Speaking of the anti-war thing, you know, Vietnam is, I mean, there's no way you could talk about it without, you know, all the controversy that goes with it. But we were talking, I want to kind of switch gears and talk about, you know, throughout the war, I mean, even before the war, General Schaup, who's already done being the commandant, he's asked to testify. And he says, you know, we shouldn't go to Vietnam. And in the piece of audio that I've seen on YouTube of his testimony, he talks about, you know, what happened to him because of that testimony, right? And so I think he testifies once and he comes back to testify a second time. And he talks about, you know, it's an honor to be here again to testify, you know, and because of this, you know, I now have the honor. And he starts talking about the things that have happened to him. You know, General Zinni, you know, in the run up to Iraq, you know, and we do a fair amount of criticism. So I just want to, I want to have a conversation about each one of our opinions about what is it about dissent that you believe is okay. And Timmy just said, you know, we are a democracy and we all know that. And what crosses a line for you where you say that's not all right. So Jeff.
Well, I think the hurling of medals, combat medals, particularly a Purple Heart, you know, into a garbage heap is insulting to people who are still fighting. In that case, they were. And for people who have fought, it's an insult to them. It basically says, I'm repudiating you if you're still going. And it's almost on a visceral level. So these guys all say, that's not what I meant at all.
Right.
But does it really matter what they meant? This is how it's going to be perceived, because that's how it's perceived by me. I think the appropriate thing to do if you're in the military, or if you're anybody who is against a war or something, especially during this time, there's no shortage, you know, of 1968 and 69 of politicians who are running for office on the anti-war platform. So go to work for the guy and make speeches and say, I'm a Vietnam vet. I fought in Vietnam. I was decorated for this. I'm telling you right now, it's a big mistake. And we're just losing good people over there. Because if you remember, when those guys started doing that, before then, the perception of the demonstrators towards the guys who were there fighting was one of contempt. And actually, it still is today, if they're honest. You know, and the idea was, some of those guys, the only good they did was to go to the demonstrator and say, hey, you got to get behind. You can't be blaming these guys for what's going on, you know, because you have some people who agree with you. But if you're, to me, if somebody tells me, you're a fucking asshole, and these emblems of your loyalty mean nothing to me now, then that's going to piss me off, and it's going to piss off, you know, a lot of older folks and stuff like that who they don't see any reason to throw the baby out with the bathwater, especially when everybody can vote. So vote for the guy who's against the war, make speeches for him, donate to his campaign, wear a hat that says, I don't know, you know, McCarthy or McGovern in 72, you know? That's how you should do it.
Timmy?
You know, you, me, and Jeff, and a vast majority of our audience are kind of lucky in that we live by a code that's been instilled with us, into us, in our childhood, but mostly in the Marine Corps, where there's lots of all kinds of ethical questions that confuse a vast majority of people that don't confuse us at all. There's very few moral questions that confuse us. So when you see somebody like John Kerry throwing those medals and making up lies, blatant friggin' lies in this Winter Soldier conference and whatnot, that is where the dissent goes from beyond the pale to my mind, because that guy's violating a code. That the code didn't apply to him. He was never a career military guy, but there's plenty of people who served 4 years who still carry within them that code that's instilled with us, because there's all kinds of moral questions in the world, and there's not confusing answers for us. It's pretty simple for us. We know the right and wrong, and we can operate in the gray. But when you start protesting like Kerry did, by telling lies specifically to maneuver yourself into a political position, that's when my that's when I start getting out of being a reasonable person and into being a very unreasonable about that particular individual, because it is appalling to me. It's worse than being a coward, and there's nothing worse than that.
Yeah, to me, that's I have this whole thing about, and it's really kind of the way I like this program to be, which is we can talk about anything if we all commit to be, you know, articulate. Now, we all know that we can disintegrate in being, you know, other people. And and none of us are foreign to that. Okay. Oh, you want to do it that way in public? All right, let's do it. Right. And so we don't try. But to me, there's two things though. And number one is the truth. And I could not agree with Tim anymore, you know, in my soul. When you lie about you know, things of substance like that, when you will stand up to further your cause and lie about it, to me, that is not what, you know, the nation has been founded on, what I believe in. And to think that you'll violate, right, all that we're about, the people that have died in this conflict, the serious nature that this debate requires, and that you will violate that to make points, to me, is beyond the Bushido violation, right? Yeah. Is beyond the Bushido. And the other thing for me is a respect thing. And, you know, whether you're throwing medals or burning the flag, okay? Now, I mean, both have been by, you know, the Supreme Court has said, right, that burning the flag is a form of free speech,
mm-hmm.
right? As I guess is throwing your medals. But don't do it in front of me.
Right.
Oh, yeah. That's right? Exactly the point.
And that's how I feel. It's like, look, I know you got a right to say, and I know you're young, dumb, and stupid, and probably don't really understand what you're doing. And I know you're angry, but is this the way, right? Is this the way you really want to do it? And so if the answer is, hey, fuck you, yes, then the response is, okay, fuck you, no, right? Yeah. And so to me, I mean, I agree with both of you in that, because let me tell you, you know, whether you talk about General Schaub, General Zinni, what's at stake here is the only life that 58,000 people ever had, the yeah. only life, and that's just the American casualties, right? Yeah. Estimated what, 1 million NVA soldiers, yeah. right? And then was it a million? No, it wasn't a million. 100,000.
Think of more.
And then
they admit to over 600,000 combat deaths.
Right. And so it was just stunning to hear. And then all the civilian deaths, both in North Vietnam from the bombing and all that shit. South Vietnam. Then in South Vietnam from the Viet Cong through the major offensive operations and all that shit. I mean, so to me, articulate, frank discussion is noble, and it's what we ought to be, and we ought to be, as long as they're telling the truth. I mean, how do you turn your back on a guy like right. like General Shoup or General Zinni, right? Because they have the balls to tell the truth, knowing, right, that it's not going to be the most favored, you know, thing that people hear, especially those committed, you know, to the military industrial complex.
Yeah.
They're not, it's going to be
talking like about Hackworth too.
Right. Right. And so to me, but it has got to be, you know, its foundation has got to be the truth. And when you watch Kerry and you see him in front of the audience that he did it with, right, say things that if you want to be generous to him and say, well, he heard that, okay, you can't say the things he said if you don't know that they're absolutely 100% factually true. Can't do that.
Yeah. And even in the show, even in the series, they have guys saying, that's bullshit.
Right.
I'm not Genghis Khan, you know.
Right.
You know, I didn't kill, you know, rape kids and all that shit. You know what I mean? So,
right.
That's exactly right. And he's very egregious act he committed.
No, and still to this day, I mean,
to this day.
One of the names that when you talk to Vietnam veterans, you'll see them just go stiff about is John Kerry.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
Third topic is. The Marine Corps has decided here not to run its PFT. And I saw that and honestly, I was stunned. Okay. Because an organization that constantly trumpets improvise, adapt, and overcome, right? That can't figure out a way to run a PFT before June 30th.
It's horrific. And you know why it's horrific? And Tim's dad could tell this better than me. But I came in the Marine Corps like the year or so after they invented the PFT. And the reason they invented the PFT was because we had Marines on all these duties that didn't let them be close to an obstacle course so they could do a PRT or, you know, have a pack and rifle. It wasn't practical for people in the embassy duty and on recruiting duty and stuff. The PFT is something that a little bit of imagination – you can carry it out to the letter, the spirit of the intent of the thing. So it's disgusting. And I also remember from that time, there was a push in all the services in the Navy, most famously by Admiral Zumwalt, to allow relaxed standards in regards to hair to keep pace with the march of society, because everybody was having beards and mustaches and dudes are looking like Shirley Temple as far as their hair and shit, and what we need to get on board with it. And General Wilson said, fuck no. Our hair standards are staying the fucking same, and we're running that goddamn PFT, whether you're on recruiting duty in Nome, Alaska, you're on embassy duty in fucking Red China. You're doing it. And it was something that people admire. The Marines don't give up on their standards just because we got a little kerfluffle going on, you know, in our daily life.
Timmy, thoughts?
Yeah, I was in the Navy with those relaxed grooming standards. It's kind of weird to look at the pictures now. But then again, when I was in the Navy, I didn't feel like I was in a military service necessarily. When I went into the Marine Corps, one thing I looked forward to every 6 months was the PFT. I am appalled. I'm appalled, first off, by the fact that we're looking at the fatality rate from this COVID-19, and it's not 23-year-old Lance Corporals dropping dead from this damn thing. So, I don't even believe it's as bad as it's been advertised based on the reality of what we're seeing. So I'm not sure when we're going to stop believing the COVID-19 that the scientists created, as opposed to the one that's seen and is right in front of our faces and really not rampaging through quite as badly as we thought. But how can you not do a PFT? It's I can think of a thousand ways off the top of my head to do it and still maintain that bullshit 6 foot distance. But were I in an infantry company right now, I'd be ignoring that nonsense. We'd be out training. Hey, sir, shouldn't we stay 6 feet? blow me. Are you kidding?
Yeah.
We got shit to do here. And I'm not going to be terrified by a damn virus.
That's right.
That sounded bad at first, but it's not.
Okay, so stay with the PFT, bro. Stay with the PFT now. All right.
Oh, yeah.
I don't want to do Stewart's Rider on McClellan right here.
I'm sorry.
No.
I do the PFT. I'm appalled that we're not doing the PFT.
That sends a message that's important for the force. And I think they should keep doing it. And most of them think that, too.
Well, you know, here's to me what I find, so disappointing, right? We constantly preach, you know, improvise, adapt, and overcome. Figure it out. Find a way to do it, right? And this one's not hard, okay? First of all, as Jeff said earlier today, you can stagger, when people start. Right. If you're going to pass somebody, stay to the right side of the road. If you're a slug, stay to the left side. Okay.
Right.
That way we could keep our distance. Pull ups. Nobody has to get near anybody to do pull ups. Okay. Yeah. And then if we want to do, if we say, okay, look, you can't do crunches, we're all going to do planks because you could opt for planks, or we're going to install this bar and that's going to anchor your feet.
Yeah.
And then we're going to solve it that way. Okay.
Yeah.
So it's not like this was that hard. But the message that you send to the force is, oh, this is too hard. We're not going to do it. And that's not the Marine answer to it. It's not, you can still do everything that your masters are telling you to do. Right. And do this and say, look, man, in spite of all this going on in the world, we still are the nation's 911 force. Okay.
Right.
We still got to be ready. We still got a PT. We still got to. We're still getting haircuts, for God's sakes. And I would say this: if you rank, what's safer to do, the PFT or to get a haircut?
PFT.
The PFT is safer.
Yeah.
So how the fuck does that shit make sense? But it's the message that you send to all these young Marine leaders that says, this is too hard for us, we're not going to do it. Instead, what our answer is, fuck you, who said it was too, who said we can't do what? Oh no, we're doing it. Right. We're doing it. Go ahead, Tim.
Imagine if we're building the Panama Canal and all of a sudden we start losing people to malaria and it's like, we're not going to be able to do this now. We're going to have to call this off because, Jesus, I'm losing people. I mean we've dealt with diseases before, and we lose people every once in a while. We have experience with big, gigantic camps full of young men who get sick, and we got routines to address this. And one of the routines is you carry on business as normal, take care of your sick. It's not friggin' rocket science. I don't understand the degree of reaction to this coronavirus, which is not proven to be what it was said to be.
Stop. We're not doing that today, okay? Stick to the fucking PFT, man, or you're going to get fucking shut off. To me, you see this, and it sends a message, and it's just, I think, disheartening. It's just disheartening. If you want to categorize risk, for some reason local commanders can decide whether you should get a haircut, but nobody gets a vote on whether we run the PFT. And again, you just have to run it by June 30th. To me, it's like, okay, here's the guidelines, here's how we're going to do it, but we're not going to run them till June. Okay, so hopefully everything's going to be better by then, but between June 1 and June 30th, everybody's running the PFT. Got it? Okay.
Even if you just did the least imaginative way, I, as proctor, I'm going to watch one guy at a time do the whole fucking thing. You know what I mean? You could do six a day, maybe more even, you know what I mean?
Right.
And then in 3 weeks, you got, you and four other guys are doing it. You got the company done, So it's insanity. It is disheartening. It makes you think they're not going to hold our feet to the fire for any kind of rigor because they're so intimidated by this thing.
And it might not even be this thing. It's that they don't want to be – they're worried that they'll be – approbate, there'll be like, you know, condemnation from above. But when the Covenant's worried about that, you know, I mean, that's his way of taking care of us by absolving us of the, you know, absolving the Marines of the responsibility to be, you know, have their fitness monitored. That's been a, that and going to the rifle range and the pistol range, those are things we do. Everybody. It's one of those things that it's a tie that binds all Marines, whether you're a jet mechanic or a lawyer, you know, or a grunt, you know what I mean? You are a, everybody does this fucking thing twice a year. Well, now they do this
once a year,
you know, once a year, and then they do the
CFT.
CFT, yeah. That's going to be something.
Yeah. There's a lot of interaction on that deal. The,
yeah, you got to carry somebody.
The, no, and then you want to fight a peer?
Yeah.
Right. Exactly.
Chinese aren't worrying about
Well,
it.
Let me tell you. I mean, also, I mean, yeah, hey, everybody, I invite you. Watch the Vietnam War series and get a sense of, or just listen to the interview that ran on All Marine Radio yesterday with a guy from Mortimer for Bravo 19, right? Yeah. And you listen to Daryl Horn tell the story of Operation Buffalo that day. And, you know, the NVA, right, they paid attention. They knew how we did movement to contact. They knew how wide our flankers would be out. And so when they laid in their multiple battalion, right, ambush, it was wide enough for Bravo Company to drive right into. And the ambush extended down the far length in vegetation, and then after they ambush him, and in the initial volleys, right, everybody who's got a radio, right, I mean, they're all dead, right, uh-huh. And 19 CP, they can hear what's going on, but they don't know what's going on because nobody's near a radio that's alive, and right. so then right, the NVA come with flamethrowers to flush Marines out of vegetation and shoot them when they're running out of vegetation. So, I mean, to me, if you're the Navy and you're in the Marine Corps, yeah, I don't know. It just, to me, it just sends a terrible message that it's too hard for us. And that's never the Marine way. And again, I get it. If you know, the chairman, you know, there's certain things that, like, okay, I got it. We can't all, 1,000 of us, we can't get the battalion in an auditorium right now. We can't. You know, hell, we can't get the company in an auditorium. We'll get platoons in there and we'll spread them out because that's the guidance. We all got that. But this.
Sergeant Major of the Marine Corps now. Sergeant Major of the Marine Corps now should be. I mean, I know the guy. He was a guest speaker at the last ball I was at. He's a great guy and he's got a great reputation as a war fighting guy. He's got to be. I can't imagine what's going on up there.
Yeah. Anyway.
Right, yeah, because like you were saying earlier, Mac, if you're going to be that way, just send them home. They can do MCI courses on their computer and promise to run. I mean, it's ridiculous.
Yeah, no, it's discouraging because to me that one's imminently solvable. I got a couple emails, you know, yesterday, and I mean they said the same thing. Is this a joke or is this real? What do you mean?
Right.
It's that problem, you can solve it, as Jeff said, right? I'm going to sit out there with my clipboard, and I'm going to watch you run around the track, right, 12 times. I'll even count them for you.
Easy.
Right?
Easy.
I've got 12 beer cups here with numbers on them, and I'll just keep stacking them, then I'll unstack them, then I'll stack them, then unstack them, and I'll yell out the fucking number for you, okay? And then you run over to the pull-up bar, and then,
sure.
Yeah, I mean, it's, I don't know.
Sooner or later, they're going to start testing people. So about a third of us are going to all be coronavirus antibody positive, and two-thirds or whatever the fraction is will be negative. So you have two groups, PFT, infected PFT motherfuckers, and non-infected. And it doesn't matter then, does it? You know, that's the key. I guess that's the key. I don't want to get off the subject of PFT, Mac. I'm saying testing will you know, at least help us deal with this knotty conundrum.
But let me tell you. But the solution's the same solution that we would apply today, right?
Yeah.
That's the beautiful
thing.
No,
you can have them all hanging out, all those sweaty, bald fucking Cronus having dudes can they can hang on to the ankles of the other Cronus having dudes and not worry about being infected because they already are. And so we are such a fraidy cat society now. You know, when you're a kid, fraidy cat. You know, that's fraidy.
Well,
cat.
And you know, and to me, here's what I see. What I see we're most afraid of is, you know, a headline in Marine Corps Times or something like that.
Yes.
That's what we're afraid of. Oh, my God, they're crawling up our ass about haircuts, and then they're bringing it up to the chairman. I mean, the chairman's answer was, you know, let me just tell you, I don't know very much about Milley, but I've seen him give two answers that he's direct and he's blunt and he's not very long.
Yeah.
The first one was about the relief of Captain Crozier. He said, look, when your superiors lose confidence in you, it's done. Next guy, let's move on. And then he just shut his mouth. That was it. Like, that's the way it goes, all right? When your superiors lose confidence in you, you're done. Next guy. And then the haircut thing, right? Do you think it's appropriate Marines are still getting haircuts? And then he told the story of his father being a corpsman on Iwo Jima. And he said, you do things like that because of discipline. And if Marines think that haircut's part of their culture and their discipline, then they should do that. And then he just like, stop. Right? And everybody's like, oh, okay. But that's not the way we...
Yeah, you can't argue it.
Right. It's not the way we... It's not. And he said, look, I have every bit of confidence in the Commandant of the Marine Corps that he's making the right decision. And, you know, and you can ask him about that if you care to. But that's what I think. You know, it's like, hello. Right?
So, yeah.
Anyway, interesting. All right, boys.
We need more guys like that.
Well, yeah. I mean, it'll be interesting to see, other things that, that he encounters. But the hardest thing to do, I think, for a lot of people is to not go deep dive on something and just say, no, here's what I think. Here's why, he's making that decision, and I stand behind him.
Yeah.
Period.
Yeah.
It sure would be nice to have a news cycle which doesn't even comment on the Marine Corps PFT, because if we were just running it and carrying on business as usual – nobody'd say anything. The only reason it's a story now is because everything's political.
Dude, let me just tell you something. One of the things you see all the time, and I don't know if it's in Navy Times because I tend not to look at that, but in Marine Corps Times is this. Tell us how your unit's doing with all of this.
Yeah.
Oh. Right? Be a snitch for us.
Yeah, that worked out. That didn't work out for de Blasio. He had to shut his phone line down.
So to me, what they want is these kind of stories, right? Some dirt on somebody that they could throw up in a big, clickbait, story.
Yeah.
And asking Marines to, hey, tell us what's going on. And so that to me kind of rubs me the wrong way, right? It's like we want to cover the military like a gossip rag and not really do news about it. We want to – it's just like, some lieutenant colonel gets relieved, right? That's top of the fold story in Marine Corps Times.
Yeah.
Lieutenant colonel getting relieved.
You're right.
It's stupid. Anyway. All right, boys. First of all,
it never used to be like that.
Oh my God! It's like a gossip. It's a gossip thing, the things that you read about the military and in Stars and Stripes is as guilty of it. It's clickbait. For military people. So anyway, interesting discussion about the Vietnam War series, about dissent, and about the PFT. So thank you very much, guys. Appreciate it.
Always a pleasure, brother.
All right. More of All Marine Radio coming up next right here on your home for it, the All Warrior Radio Network.